Our guest this hour says Democrats and Republicans, the right and the left, conservatives and liberals have all been unable to address the core issues facing the nation or provide effective solutions. We'll talk about how he proposes to transform the political and economic debate in this country by following a common credo. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Wednesday, August the 21st. Our guest is the author of Common Credo, The Path Back to American Success. He says we can start moving forward by looking back to the founding fathers and their definition of freedom and the common goals that the founding fathers believed that we all shared. We welcome your questions as we go along at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is John Schwartz. He is a professor emeritus of political science at the University of Arizona. His writing has appeared in The Atlantic, The New Republic, The Nation, The Wall Street Journal, and The New York Times. His most recent book is Common Credo, The Path Back to American Success. Good morning.
It's nice to be with you, Joy.
Thank you very much for being with us. So what do you, is this something new? Did this just happen with the the financial crisis and the emergence of the Tea Party groups?
By the this, do you mean the polarization?
Right.
The polarization, I think, has been increasing ever since the middle 1960s, probably. The idea of libertarian freedom came to become more and more dominant among conservatives, but at the surface of thinking of many Americans, the notion of freedom as sink or swim type freedom, which was not the idea of the founders at all.
What was the idea of the founders?
Well, with regard to sink or swim, meaning in the economy, their idea was that every person should be able to have means available to them to make a decent living and get ahead through their efforts and their own resources, which in the case of, for example, of Thomas Jefferson, meant the public, the government, granting to every person 50 acres of land for them to be able to have the means to do that. So they were not sink or swim type people at all. Their idea of freedom was that you were free only if you had the means available to you to make a decent living and get ahead in the economic area.
Yeah. But so how have we gotten off track in America?
Well, this idea of freedom began to develop. That what freedom meant was simply voluntary exchange. If you exchanged your money for products from others voluntarily, or you exchanged your labor for a wage, that this is what freedom was. And it's true that voluntary exchange is a component of freedom, but it is not the only thing that freedom involves in the ideas of the founders.
So how have we gotten off track?
Well, as we've accepted on the surface of our thinking, more the idea of freedom being simply voluntary exchange, we've forgotten the part about, again, at the surface of our thinking, about the need for everyone to have the kind of means available to them, meaning opportunity, to be able to make a decent living and get ahead. Today in this country, more than a third of all workers are either unemployed or they're working for less than a living wage for full-time work. That is not a means to make a decent living and get ahead when more than a third of the country is unable to, doesn't have the opportunity to do that.
Yeah.
So We need to, beneath the surface of our thinking, of course, we all think in terms of the American dream, that what this country stands for is the opportunity for everybody to make a decent living and get ahead. We have simply increasingly ignored that idea at the surface, thinking of freedom meaning more just letting the free market operate, and that it would provide optimal economic growth. That may or may not be true, but it certainly hasn't provided the kind of opportunity for everybody that the founders considered essential to freedom.
All right, well, let's talk about the common credo. What traits are essential for governing ideology in your common credo?
Well, the common credo starts from the idea of the, in the Declaration of Independence, that all men are created equal, which means also that all men must be free, because if we're all equal, no one should be able to impose his will on anybody else, so that all of us should be free from others imposing their will on us. And then this gets into other areas, such as the one dealing with economic opportunity that we've just been talking about, where there's opportunity for everybody. That's a part of freedom. Another part of freedom is a government that is able to fulfill its responsibilities and is empowered fully to do that, but does not spend more or restrict more than is necessary to fulfill its responsibilities. So that's still another element. A further element is the idea that we all respect the freedom of each other and give due consideration to the legitimate interests of everybody in their freedom, even to the point of sacrificing our own self-interest when it concerns the legitimate interests of others in their freedom.
So what do you think stands in the way of implementing the common credo?
I think that it, Franklin Roosevelt, the ideals and values that go into our common credo and even our idea of freedom have not been enunciated by political leaders of either side, which is what opened the way to this much narrower idea of freedom, libertarian freedom. It opened the way for it to enter and then ascend, and it probably reached its ascendancy with Milton Friedman's book called Free to Choose, and the presidency of Ronald Reagan. But it went more or less unchallenged as an idea of freedom by the opposing party, by the Democrats. So what stands in the way is, I think, is our leaders not understanding what the founders' idea of freedom was, so that the whole country has gotten off track as a result.
Right, so you say that liberals violate this by having no well-defined foundation. Where do we see this most in contemporary politics?
Well, if you ask a liberal, what do they see as the aim, of government or the aim of the society, they, I think, will say things such as equality or the common good or fairness, ideas like that. I hope that sounds familiar to you and to your listeners. Well, the problem with this is that there isn't any definition of those ideas. If you ask a liberal, for example, about equality and ask them, well, do you want complete equality of wealth, complete equality of property, complete equality of income, or every job paying exactly the same wage, hardly any liberal will agree with that idea of equality. And so when you ask, well, what level of pay is, you know, equal pay is okay, they really don't have any answer for that. That's what I mean by liberals not having a bottom line. Same is true for the common good. If you ask, well, what exactly is the common good? Liberals do not have a bottom line definition of that that we can all see and talk about and then decide whether we like it or not.
And you say that even though conservatives do have a consistent set of principles and narrative, they have trouble applying them consistently. How have we seen this expressed?
Well, a difficulty with the conservatives is that their bottom line these days, this has not been true historically, but these days, is this libertarian idea of freedom. And so what you get, for example, is the libertarian idea of freedom literally means that voluntary exchange is all that matters. As long as it's voluntary, then it is legitimate. It doesn't matter how much opportunity is available. It doesn't matter what resources you have, an individual has. So they get into a problem of wanting the free market to do everything. And when you get into something like health insurance, take that as an example, or medical care, individuals can't operate completely in a free market because of the need for insurance that is incredibly expensive. So you get a candidate for the Republican Party who, on the one hand, proposed something that is very similar to the Affordable Care Act that was passed in 2010. But then runs away from it when he tries to get the Republican nomination in 2012, and so you get these people contradicting their own bottom line philosophy. Same thing with Social Security. No Republican has called for the end of taxation for Social Security. They may want to privatize it, but they would still use tax money for individuals then to put it in private accounts. You can't justify something like Social Security based on a libertarian idea of freedom. So they end up contradicting themselves in many, many areas. The Tea Party people who are on the right wing of the Republican Party had that famous example of somebody saying, government, take your hands off my Medicare.
Right. Well, help us understand why conservatives might say that the Affordable Care Act is socialism when it depends on the private insurance market.
Well, they might. I think their claim is totally wrong, but I think what they have in mind, and even though it's wrong, is that when you call on people and require them to obtain insurance, that is a form of government coercion that they probably view as socialism. When you mandate employers more than 50 employees to provide insurance, they probably view that as socialism. When you have government regulations that say insurance policies must contain such and such, certain kinds of benefits, they view that as socialism. Anything that involves government outside of the minimal areas of police powers and defense, the people on the far right view as socialism.
So how do you see if Congress was following your common credo, how might the debate over Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act be different?
Well, we would be looking at it from the point of view that every person should have the means to make a decent living and get ahead. Part of that is access to the means to have decent effective medical care. And the question then would be, how can we bring those means to everybody in a way that they can afford, that retains complete individual choice, that would be the question we'd be asking, not whether or not government should be involved.
We are talking with John Schwartz. He is a professor emeritus of political science at the University of Arizona. We are talking with him about his book, Common Credo, The Path Back to American Success. He says that America isn't necessarily as divided as many may think it is. He says neither liberals nor conservatives have the answers to solve our current economic woes or problems that the majority of Americans care about. Instead, he says that the key to moving forward is to look back at the founding fathers, whose definition of freedom can unite Americans and provide clear policy solutions. We are discussing his proposed Common Credo for American Governance, and we will welcome your questions for him. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about how we can agree in politics. We are talking about how we can help solve some of the problems facing America. And we are talking about the Common Credo. Our guest is John Schwartz. He is the author of Common Credo, The Path Back to American Success. If you have a question for him, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Well, let's be a little more in depth on what you are calling the Common Credo. It has 10 principles, and we really, I don't think, have time to go through each one of them in any depth. But how would you summarize the Common Credo?
excuse me. The Common Credo is basically the American ideas of starting that all men are created equal and the freedom that everyone must have as a result that lead to what Americans call the land of opportunity, the American dream, and secondly, limited government. And if you put those ideas together, that's essentially what the Common Credo is and what we have generally gotten away from.
Yeah, and why is freedom so essential to this?
Well, it was the founding value of the country. So historically, it's central to us because that was the core value of the founders. But it was their core value because of their belief in two things: the self-evident truth that all men are created equal, and the truth that the Creator created all men as equal. And from both of those premises, whether it's secular or religious, is derived the idea that all men must be free.
Heather in Sun Prairie is with us. Hello, Heather.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Okay, so I hear this argument frequently. There's a couple of problems I have with it. First of all, when we talk about the founders of the United States, it's always sort of referred to as there's some sort of mythical group of people that had perfect ideas. But, I mean, they were just a group of intellectuals and politicians that were around 200, almost 440 years ago, which in my mind isn't relevant at all to today. I mean, we certainly use some philosophies from those times, but they were basically talking about breaking away from monarchies, which we in the United States and Western Europe and Eastern Europe, where they were coming from, don't use anymore. Secondly, when they talked about obviously all people being created equal, they didn't, you know, talk about minorities or women or anything like that. So I just feel like it's at best a dubious argument, at worst a complete fallacy. The second, the use of the word socialism and any ism I've discovered in the United States, be it communism, socialism, fascism, social democracy, which people don't even know about. Basically, Americans are by and large uninformed about what those political systems look like. I've lived in Europe for a number of years and married to a European, and I would consider myself perhaps a social democrat in their system, and it's a perfectly viable system. I think the problem with the United States is that we're sort of in the adolescence of our country where, you know, we think we know what we're doing, but we haven't had enough time or experience to make adult decisions. And I think adult political decisions look a little bit more like social democracies, where we realize that you need to take care of people and a minimum wage needs to, you know, give enough money for people to live on. The idea that America is going to be the land of opportunity, in my opinion, is the fallacy, because we have reached the point that many European countries might have reached after World War II, where we really just don't have that type of ever-growing resources and populations, and we kind of need to learn how to live like a responsible grown-up nation.
Thank you very much, Heather. Let's get to a couple of big points there, Professor Schwartz, but your reaction first to what Heather just said.
Well, Heather, number one, I think what you're saying is excellent and wonderful. Let me just respond to the points that you make. You suggest that the founders are something from another age, and of course I agree that they are from another age. What Common Credo is saying is that these ideas that we're talking about here from the founders are still what Americans believe beneath the surface of their thinking. That's why it's relevant today. This credo is something that virtually all Americans believe in. I also understand your point about the idea that they had these ideals, and yet at the same time they were grossly abusing American Indians. There was slavery in the country. These were ideals Thomas Jefferson hoped someday would include everybody, understanding that it was not the case. It was an imperfect union at the beginning. Regarding the idea that eventually we will reach some sort of social democratic ideals when we quote-unquote grow up, I simply remind you that many of the ideas that we're talking about here, Americans were enacting and had in place in the 1940s, 50s, and 60s. We had a much higher minimum wage. We had programs available to people that gave them the means, that were part of the opportunity. Government programs can be part of the opportunity that we're talking about in a land of opportunity for people who are working and unable to make it through the ordinary pace system of wages. And that's what the founders thought. As I said, Jefferson believed that every person should have available to them 50 acres of land provided by the public if necessary. So I think many of the points you make are wonderful points, but they do not, in my view, oppose what is being said in the Common Credo or its principles.
Let's go next to Mike in Milwaukee. Hello, Mike.
Hi. Thanks for having me on. I disagree wholeheartedly with the topic. James Madison, in his paper, his number 10 paper, in response to Hamilton, and Madison was responsible for actually writing the Constitution and the form of government that we presently have, said basically that he installed the type of government, the republic form of government, so that he could have factions, and the factions could keep the people divided, and the oligarchy could use, or he called them the opulent at, in that paper. The minority of the opulent needs to be protected from the majority of the poor and the working class, the people got their fingernails, that got dirt under their fingernails and such. And he wanted the oligarchy to be able to use the factions one against the other so that democracy for those lower class people could never be realized. And that's what's presently happening now, and that's why, because of the basis of the Constitution, I think that we won't realize that in our lifetime unless we change it. So I'd like to hear your response. Thank you.
Again, I think that that's a wonderful question. James Madison did believe in factions, checking factions. He believed, and I have quotes to this effect in the Common Credo in the book, that the freest and happiest society was one where individuals had the means to be able to make a decent living and get ahead. That is, were quote-unquote independent. Where individuals were economically independent, the kind of thing that you're speaking about would not arise as an issue even. So this idea of opportunity and the means available to people to make a decent living was central to Madison and to his idea of what could make for a stable, free society.
Thanks very much, Mike, for the call. I'm Joy Cardine talking with John Schwartz. He is author of Common Credo, The Path Back to American Success. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our next caller is Scott in Nisida. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Joy and John. Thank you very much for your work, both of you. I think I love these ideas, political philosophy, but I've been intrigued for a long time about this idea of distributing land for people so that they can be independent, at least reasonably independent anyway, but I didn't know that Jefferson promoted that idea, and I'm glad to hear that. But and today, I think it would be wonderful. I'd want to throw the idea out there to find out whether you, John, or Joy, I think this would be very practical today. I think it would be even, we wouldn't even need with our today's technology or our ability to do things much more efficiently, we wouldn't need 50 acres for every family, but much less than that to even produce enough to grow for ourselves. So instead of doing the food stamps and all that type of thing for everybody, well, maybe it wouldn't be for everybody, but for a lot of people, all the government land that's not being used for anything, buying up, using tax money to buy up private land that nobody's buying. I'm saying, well, okay, we'll use that and give that to people and help them out that way. So maybe that's a little bit peripheral to what your central discussion is, but that's my question. That's
yeah.
all.
What about that, Professor Schwartz?
Oh, Scott, thank you for calling in. The founders, of course, Madison, Jefferson, and Washington, and the others, all of whom believed what we're speaking about here, they lived in a time when the economy was based on farming and agriculture. That's no longer true today. We have an industrial market economy. And what is needed is for people to be able to be independent within the context of an industrial market economy. Which means, regarding some of the past callers, a higher minimum wage, a larger earned income tax credit, and policies like that to enable all working people to be able to make a decent living. In addition, so that would give everybody the means to make a decent living. There needs to be also more jobs for people who are now unemployed and looking for work, as well as a way for workers to get ahead. For the past 40 years, it's astounding today that people today, the average worker today, is working for the same wage that their grandparents did 40 years ago, despite an improvement by almost 100% in the amount of work they do per hour, the amount of production they do per hour. We've got to come to grips with this problem of the increasing productivity of workers, but the lack of any increase in workers' pay. And the Common Credo suggests solutions for dealing with that problem as well. Going back to your original point, spreading land around won't create independence for individuals today, because we no longer live in a farming economy. But other kinds of public policies, such as increasing the minimum wage, increasing the earned income tax credit, stiffening up regulations for supporting collective bargaining, things like that, can create just the kind of thing that the founders were thinking about, apply, and that is the basis of the Common Credo, applied to today's world. At the same time, doing that will increase demand substantially and allow our economy to get out of its present doldrums, and the doldrums it's been in really for more than a decade now.
We are talking with John Schwartz. He is author of Common Credo, The Path Back to American Success. He says that the key to moving forward in this country is to look back to the Founding Fathers, whose definition of freedom can unite Americans and provide some clear policy solutions. We're talking about the Common Credo and how it can help us address the most important problems facing this country, and welcoming your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about our Common Credo, some of the goals that Americans have in common, and wondering how we can fix some of America's problems and get change the political and economic debate in this country. Our guest is the author of Common Credo, The Path Back to American Success. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is John Schwartz, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at the University of Arizona. Dan in Janesville is with us. Hello, Dan.
Yeah, I had a question. I constantly hear libertarians and Tea Partiers talk about a smaller government. It's my view that government now is much smaller than it was in our Founding Fathers' times. I mean, back then you had 100 people, a town of 100 people, that had a mayor and a town council and their law enforcement for the day. And now you have governments that you have a mayor overseeing a few million people. And I wonder how libertarians and Tea Partiers come up with this idea that government isn't already smaller than it used to be.
Mm-hmm. Professor Schwartz?
Well, Dan, thank you for the question. I think what Tea Partiers are and the far right are pointing to is primarily the federal government when they're thinking about big government. And the federal government is unquestionably much, much larger than it was in the time of the founders. And they're thinking about the amount of taxes that go to the federal government, the amount of regulation that the federal government does in areas like healthcare or education. And that's what they're pointing to when they say, when they think of the government as being larger. A big problem, I think, again, that where there's a confusion of what the idea of freedom is, freedom is not in favor of small government or big government, either one. Freedom is in favor of limited government. Limited government is that government that is large enough to do what it's supposed to do and no larger. That's very different from the concept of small government or big government. And so it's another example of how the political culture has gotten off track with regard to this basic value in America, the value of freedom, talking about small government rather than talking about limited government.
Thanks very much, Dan, for the call. David in Oconto Falls is with us now. Hello, David.
Hi. I see a huge difference in the mindset. I'm 57 years old. I was raised on a farm, and my parents didn't make a heck of a lot of money, but they were somewhat independent and proud of it, of what they could get. What I see now in young people, and it's very unnerving to me, is people in their 20s, early 30s, they view the presidency, say Barack Obama or George, whoever's in office, as like a king, like a leader that's going to help them. And Washington, they always keep talking about, well, the Affordable Care Act, and I'm going to have health insurance, and the government's going to take care of me. And that right there, the way I think about it, is very unnerving to me, because it's looking as like our Washington and our leaders are kings, princes, and earls. You know, it's like they constantly, if something goes wrong in their life, they want government to fix it for them, like mommy and daddy. And in my life, something has gone, you know, it's the pursuit of happiness. It's the chance to get ahead. And when these young people come out of college and they say, well, I'm worth so much money and I'm educated now and I can go and I'm going to make so much money and life's going to be good. Well, there's no guarantees. And I keep trying to tell these people this. Look, it's the pursuit of happiness. It's the chance to go. But there's no guarantees in your life that you're going to have an easy go. And I keep telling them, if you can't do it in 8 hours, if you can't make a living on one job, then you work two, then you work three. I mean, you might do just fine, but don't look to the government to take care of you if things go wrong. Don't look at the government. It's your life. You take care of yourself.
All right. Thanks very much, David. Professor Schwartz, do you agree with David that young people make kings out of our presidents?
David, thanks for calling in. I think you're expressing concerns that a number of people have. It is, people need to be responsible for themselves. And you could take those same people that you're referring to and look at and maybe have a different view of what they're thinking. They could be thinking, look, I want to work. I want to work hard. But I also want to be able to afford health insurance. And the role of government is not to give me health insurance. The role of government is to help make health insurance affordable for people who are working hard every day. That, I think, is very much in the American tradition. That people take responsibility for themselves, and if they do so, the opportunity will be there for them to make at least a minimally basic, decent living. Yes, you take your chance in terms of getting wealthy, being very well off, but you shouldn't, working year-round full-time should be able to deliver a minimally decent living to people. That's what taking responsibility is working year-round full-time.
He says if you can't find that one high-paying job, work two jobs, work three jobs.
Well, that would be true maybe if you want to get really wealthy, well off. But I don't think we have the idea that a person has to work 16 hours a day in order to make a minimally decent living, meaning to be able to have a spouse and two children. If you have one and two-thirds workers in the family, one person working year-round full-time, the other working two-thirds time, that ought to be able to deliver you the $35,000 or so necessary to have a basic, decent living, along with benefits, meaning access to decent health care. Those are contributing Americans. Remember, every person doing this is in a job that is delivering a service that other people want and don't want to do themselves. Every person is doing that 8 hours a day, 2,000 hours a year. That's more than people were working in the an agricultural farm community.
Right. So, how help us understand how the common credo might solve our problem of unemployment and make sure there are three jobs for everybody if that's what we need.
Well, we don't need three jobs.
Right. I know we don't.
Person.
But
we need decent paying jobs for every person. What is the main thing that has gone wrong here is this idea that the free market will create the opportunity. And the free market is great in creating efficiency, but it does not necessarily create adequate opportunity. So what has happened in this free market atmosphere, and this is going to take about a minute or so to answer, is that productivity has gone up, but wages have not gone up. Wages, instead, all the compensation has gone to the top, virtually 100% of it. People at the top don't spend money. They're not really consumers. They spend about 20% of their pay. People in the middle spend 90% of their pay. The result of the huge increase, disparity in pay going up to the top, therefore has been a lot of demand has been taken out of the economy. If we were to have policies that corrected the disparities in pay and prevented further disparities in pay, it would increase demand enormously in the economy, which would be the reason then why the private sector itself, you don't need the government to create the jobs, the private sector would create the jobs. And the common creed of the book shows and quantifies how $1 trillion approximately has been taken out of the economy on a yearly basis, that in terms of demand, that money, if it were available in demand, is enough to create 7, 8, 9 million jobs, as well as to increase pay for present workers, and would go a long distance to solving the problem we're talking about. You wouldn't need two jobs. You could do it on one job. Moreover, there'd be many more jobs for people who are now without jobs and looking for them.
Steve emails, many people use the term free market as it refers strictly to keeping the government out of the markets and economy. I'm not sure that's what it really means, though. Would the guest comment on the need for a clear definition of free market?
Well, I think that the listener is correct that's kind of what the free market has come to mean, except for some basics, such as the government defining what contracts are and what patents are and having laws against theft and fraud and stuff and things like that. The free market then means simply voluntary exchange. And as I've suggested, that is not what I think we mean beneath the surface of our thinking. Freedom, and we've come to equate the free market with freedom, at least at the surface of our thinking, but that's not what we think beneath the surface of our thinking.
Daryl in New Richmond is with us. Hello, Daryl.
Hi, how you doing? And hi to you, John.
Hi,
I'm going to give you all the credit for, I'm sure you know the Constitution way better than I do, but from what I understand, and I have just begun my study of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, but is it not written on a true capitalist system. And this government, good, bad, or ugly, Republican or Democrat, has not been a true capitalist government. You know, how can Walmart get all this money from the government? How can Menards get all this money from the government when they're very, very profitable companies? I'm not saying they're bad. All I'm saying is, how can the government keep giving all this money to these big, profitable corporations, and yet it will run a deficit of trillions of dollars? I don't have a problem with having a safety net. People need safety nets. I've had to rely on one for a very short time. They're okay. But there has to be a line drawn someplace.
Yeah, all right. So he's talking about what some call corporate welfare, Professor Schwartz.
Daryl, that's a great question. There are two forms of corporate welfare. One, I think the one you're referring to, is tax subsidies of one kind or another given to corporations. With respect to that type of thing, I'm in total agreement with you. Corporations, we need to think about limited government, as we've talked about before in this conversation. Many of these subsidies are purely the result of power politics. They are not the result of applying our principles. There's a second form of corporate welfare, and that is where corporations pay low wages, and then the taxpayer makes it up with things like the food stamps and housing benefits and things like that. And that, too, needs to be reconsidered by way of a higher minimum wage, for example, which I have no doubt that corporations can afford. We can talk about that at greater length if you want.
No, because we only have a minute to go, I'm afraid. Yeah. How hopeful are you that your common credo gets embraced in our nation?
I'm actually hopeful. I think what is needed is that it be brought to light. And in bringing it to light, people, I think, will think more in terms of it, and then we will begin getting back on the right track.
Thank you very much for joining us. John Schwartz, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at the University of Arizona. His most recent book is Common Credo, The Path Back to American Success. Tomorrow at this time, by the way, we will be talking to the author of The Internet Police about online crime and law enforcement in the digital age. That's tomorrow at this time. Thanks to Christy Taylor for producing this program. Thanks to Bill Martins for on-air direction. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.